What you are about to hear is the story of a connection that was made between a television series and a viewer's life. Our television set sits in the corner of our living room, befriending us, educating us, inspiring us, making us laugh or cry or tear our hair out in frustration. It is a far more constant companion than most of the friends we will ever make, or even our family. The You and Who books are the story of that companionship, that connection, as told by the people who watch the programmes that make us come alive, chiefly, of course, Doctor Who. This podcast will relate some of those stories. You're listening to You and Who Talking, and I'm J.R. Southall, the creator and chief editor of the series. Hi, I'm JR.
Hi, I'm Rob.
And you're listening to You and Who Talking. And, well, this week we're going to have an essay from Gareth Kearns about The Impossible Planet and the Satan Pit.
Yes, and it's a return to Doctor Who, because the last couple of weeks we've been talking non-Doctor Who.
Yeah, exactly. You and Who Talking is going to cover all sorts of bases, but obviously it's always going to return to Doctor Who. And even when it doesn't, there'll be a slight Doctor Who theme most of the time. The story that Gareth's covering in this essay is more of a recent one. Obviously, it's new series. And when we were doing Contact Has Been Made, we were getting a lot of nostalgia for the classic series in Volume 1. And in Volume 2, which was the new series, people were coming up with a bigger variety of different ways of talking about the stories that they were covering, because, you know, you don't necessarily have nostalgia for something that's only 2 or 3 years ago.
Mm.
So I think Gareth's found an interesting way of talking about The Impossible Planet that manages to sort of mingle review with personal feelings with a little bit of sort of slight nostalgia for where he was at the time that the story was broadcast, where he was in his feelings about Doctor Who.
Yes, exactly. And I don't want to preempt any of that, but there's also some other nice remembrances in there. He heard that the series was coming back while he was in the middle of organising a convention, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's something many of us can relate to, where we were when we heard the series was coming back. And I love these little things that people wheedle into their essays, you know, because you can either relate or you can at least understand where they're coming from.
Exactly. And if somebody mentions something like that, that just gives you pause to stop and think, well, where was I? What was I doing? Most of the people, if not all of the people listening to this podcast, will know exactly what they were doing when they heard that Doctor Who was coming back in 2003. I can certainly remember what I was doing. I used to work nights and finish at 5:15, and virtually the last thing I heard before we walked out the door to leave was the 5 a.m. news broadcast. And at the time, you had a pre-recorded news that would go out overnight at once an hour, 1 a.m, 2 a.m, 3 and 4 a.m. And then at 5 a.m, you'd get the new pre-record for the coming day ahead. So the 5 a.m. news broadcast would always have the new news for the day on it. And it was at the end of the 5 a.m. news broadcast that Doctor Who was going to return. I suspect then, given that I was there at 5 a.m, I must have been one of the first people in the country to hear about it.
You would have been, yeah.
Yeah, quite an odd thing. Cool. And yeah, so there I am, 5:15, going home, trying to get to bed to go to sleep, and thinking, oh, Doctor Who's coming back.
My story is a little different. I was separated from my first wife and sitting there alone in my study thinking of what Doctor Who merchandise I wanted to buy. And I heard the show was coming back. I thought, oh no, everything's going to go up in price on eBay. So I started buying things like crazy. That's my story.
And then, oh god, yeah, that is something that's happened since the series came back, is, you know, not all of it by any means, but a lot of the classic series stuff suddenly, that nobody really wanted at all, became very sought after, didn't it?
Well, I'll tell you one thing I bought at that exact moment. I bought what I thought was the first Hartnell annual, and it was actually that Invasion from Space annual style book, which isn't really,
really
an annual. And I was so bummed because I wanted his first annual, not this weird Invasion from Space thing. But now that Invasion from Space thing, as I'm calling it, is worth heaps.
Yeah, I can imagine it is.
Wow. More than the first annual, actually, yeah.
Yeah, because the annual, well, actually the first couple and then subsequent ones had such big print runs. This is what eBay, you know, prior to eBay, you couldn't get the annuals for love nor money. After eBay, some of them, not all of them, are so easy to find that they're not cheap as chips, but not as expensive as you'd think. But yeah. Some of the other ones, the Patrick Troughton ones, things like what you've just mentioned, which had much shorter print runs, have suddenly become like gold dust instead, haven't they?
Oh, yeah, and don't even get me started on the last few of the New Adventures, which did have very limited print runs.
Oh, God, absolutely, yeah. Right, anyway, shall we let Gareth get on with talking about The Impossible Planet?
Oh, yes, there's an essay, isn't there? Okay, yes. Yeah. Take it away, Gareth.
The Impossible Squidginess of Being. The Impossible Planet by Gareth Kearns. Ah, 2003. There I am, helping organise a very big Doctor Who convention, and the news breaks. They're going to bring it back. Jubilation! Well, hey, Christopher Eccleston. Bit left field, but inspired. Okay, I'm not going to chalk up every single one of his stories as top draw, but you can't go wrong with a bit of Dalek or The Empty Child, can you? The Unquiet Dead is clearly an homage to the great days of Holmes, Hinchcliffe, darkly comic gothic, from the years when yours truly was snared, when to be a fan of Doctor Who at school was the rule, not the exception. There is evident respect for what came before, and what more could we older fans who kept the faith through the wilderness years ask for? And I've no idea who this Tennant bloke is, but that teeth thing was spot on. But then it all gets a tad floppy for Wicked Uncle David's first season. Great setups are routinely let down by stories that, ultimately, just don't make sense. For me, these were the dark days. Being one of only three Doctor Who fans in my hometown in darkest Wales in the 1980s, when the BBC itself is evidently attempting to destroy the programme, that never bothered me. Being a fan in the 90s, when fans are regularly dismissed as odd, nope, didn't bother me. But being a fan of something that I felt was treating me with contempt and as an idiot, now that did bother me. And then there was The Impossible Planet and The Satan Pit. In the first minutes, the story is established firmly in one of the classic molds of Doctor Who, the remote base under siege. As the Doctor says, sea base, moon base, doesn't matter. The scenario could have been ripped straight out of Season 5, the turf of the mighty Trout and the faithful Jamie. Also, we have Rose and the Doctor's momentary contemplation of the dodging of possible danger, and hilarity ensues. This is what they do. It's what the Doctor has always done. And a door opens, and gruesome monsters approach, apparently intent on feeding upon the Doctor and his trusty companion. People, we've only just hit the opening credits. I'm sitting there thinking, good gravy, that's the best 3 minutes of Doctor Who I've seen in decades. And as the opening credits roll, I begin to hope. No, it'll all fall apart. It'll be thrown away just like tooth and claw. That had looked really promising for, 30 minutes, and then got wrapped up in the most perfunctory recognition that their 40 minutes is about to be up I've ever had the misfortune to see the license fee wasted upon. The Impossible Planet's magisterial cliffhanger arrives, and the ball has not been dropped. The drama has built, the stakes have been raised, and it's all rational, cogent, not just histrionic. We've had horror, tragedy, laughs, surprise, and the most atmospheric incidental music since the mid-70s. For goodness sakes, the creature even sounds like Sutek. Of course, it could all be blown away next week. That's what happened to every story so far this season, an intriguing setup thrown at the end as if no one can quite manage to construct a story out of a collection of interesting elements. It felt like make or break for me that week. It had looked like Doctor Who was unravelling into a light froth of heat-styly emotional snapshots with the odd appearance by a nasty to justify the use of the logo in the credits. Here rose the prospect that there'd just been a bit of a bad patch. That Doctor Who, as I could recognise it, could actually live in a modern TV context. The Satan Pit, however, didn't exactly deliver on that hope. No. The Satan Pit exceeded it. How? Well, the action continued in something of a traditional manner, in the not-exactly-ventilation shafts. Heroism, tragedy. But it's the Doctor and Ida's dilemma that really grabbed me. The existential crisis they face, the Doctor's identity asserted as he's suspended, it's actually the same argument as to be or not to be. If lost, if death beckons, who are you? What do you do? Is your identity real? Does it matter? And will it be true to itself? When it comes right down to it, who are you? What do you do? Why do you do it? The Doctor always used to describe himself as a scientist or, and more usually, a traveller. So this is it. No hope. What does he do? It might be 30 feet. It might be infinity. Ah well. So hey. Let's at least look. Identity and assertion of will whilst running around from squidgy-faced monsters who aren't really monsters at all. And then, finally, an assertion of faith in Rose, an assertion of faith in her identity. And then, guess what? The TARDIS is down there. Which is not a deus ex machina, as some people very proud of their pidgin Latin like to opine, because we know the TARDIS is down there somewhere. As it happens, being not where he wanted her to be, but where he needed her to be. This was a Doctor Who, proud of its heritage, striking out somewhere new, asking the biggest questions our culture has ever thought to ask, whilst being chased about by squidgy-faced monsters. This, ladies and gentlemen, was Doctor Who being what only Doctor Who is able to be.
You've been listening to You and Who Talking, presented by Rob Irwin with J.R. Southall. The You and Who books, from which all royalties are paid to charity, are available in print and for Kindle from watchingbooks.weebly.com.